Everyone, welcome to CS50's walkthrough for problem set 2. I'm Marta Bralick. I'll be hosting these walkthroughs every week. Emerson 108 at 7 p.m. will go latest up until 8:30. So that you know, if you can watch these videos starting Tuesday on the website, but if you do want to come, you can ask questions, more interactive, you can start your piece set earlier, things like that. So let me first ask, who was at the walkthrough last week? Oh, and you came back. I'm so glad. Anything you want more of this week besides more code? Just shout it out. Anything you want more of?
Like more explanations?
More, okay. And then how was piece set one? Everything okay? Does anyone still have any lingering questions about problem set one? Okay. So problem set two, a lot of what we're going to discuss about it today it will be covered in sections this week. So we'll be talking about arrays, that's going to be a big topic, and command line arguments. These things will be covered in sections this week, so those of you that are right here now, you might not understand all of this because I don't have the amount of time that your section leaders are going to have to go over it. So know that anything about arrays, command line arguments, functions will be covered in sections this week for those of you that didn't have section today. For those of you watching online, you should be clear on these topics. Have you read the problem set? Raise your hand if you've read the problem set and raise them high. Okay, great. So most everyone has read the problem set. How does it look? Let's do thumbs up, sideways, down. A little bit of everything. I can't even gauge it. Okay, so cool. So there are three parts to the problem set. There's the old man. So it's the same as P set one where you had three parts. That's very much the layout of this one as well. So you have old man, which is going to be singing the old man song. I'd sing it for you if I had even a little bit of talent. I don't. So we're not going to sing the old man song, but you're going to have to write a program that writes it out. Then we're going to have the Caesar program. The Caesar program is a cipher. It's a pretty simple cipher. What it does, it takes a word, and it takes a number, and it shifts every letter in that word by that number of letters. So this is a very simple cipher to break, and it's also sort of simple to implement. Sort of simple. And then we're going to do Visionnaire, which is a little bit more complicated to break. It's also a little bit more complicated to make. So those of you doing the hacker problem set, here at the walkthrough we're going to be going over the standard edition, but the hacker edition is actually going to ask you to be a hacker and to break into someone's username, to break into someone's account by finding out their password. So it's kind of cool, but we won't be talking about that today. So one thing that I want to talk about before we actually get into the specifics of this problem set is things that are applicable for all problem sets. So now on your Scratch problem set, which you will be getting back before Friday, you will also get problem set one back before Friday. P-set zero, Scratch, you were not graded on style and design. You're only graded on correctness. So either it works or it doesn't. But in the future, starting with PSET 1, you'll be graded on three axes. So 5 points for correctness. This, we just run a program, either it works or it doesn't, and that's your correctness score. So that's very not subjective. Design, there's going to be 5 points for design. Now, what is good design? So a main question you'll ask about design is, did I do this in the most efficient way possible? Now, most of the time, you won't be doing it in the most efficient way possible ever, but you want to be more efficient than some, you know, little goofs. And I'm going to point out these kind of little goofs as we go along in the walkthrough so that you see what kind of design decisions you're going to need to make. For style, you're also going to be graded on five points of style. Now, style, many of you might have figured out just by looking at David's lecture. The source code from David's lectures is perfect for style. If you're ever wondering how much should I comment, where should I indent, where should I put brackets, how should I name my variables, all those things are perfectly done in David's lecture notes or in David's lecture code. So look at how often he comments. Usually a good rule of thumb is every time you have sort of a bracketed off function or whatever, if you have like an if statement or you have a for loop, things like that need to be commented. So what does this for loop do? What am I incrementing? What is I in this for loop? Or what are these variables that are used inside this for loop? What is the purpose of this loop? If it's an if condition, why am I testing this condition? Why do I need to know this? What am I going to do if it's true? What am I going to do if it's false? So basically around each block of code sort of, and you'll see this, you'll get a feel for it as you go along, you need to have comments. Anytime you do something that isn't going to be immediately clear to your grader why you did it, you also need a comment. So if you come up with a way of doing something that maybe wasn't talked about in walkthrough, maybe it doesn't say to do it that way in the spec, in the problem set spec, but you think that that's a good way of doing it, then just write, you know, a little comment. I'm doing it this way because of this. Whenever you name variables, try to have good variable names. Variable names that make sense. So if you're having variables that are A, B, C, D, or X, Y, Z, your grader is going to be a little frustrated when they're reading it, and they're like, well, what's variable Y? And what's variable Z? And if they have to keep going up and down, they're not going to be happy with your style. So your style, you want to put, you know, if it's a variable that counts in Mario, for example, if you had a variable that stored how many stars you needed, that variable would logically be called stars. If you had one that stored the number of spaces, name that spaces, so that your grader knows exactly what you're doing. And later when it says if spaces is greater than whatever number, then they know, oh, he's checking to see the number of spaces. It's not always checking J. You know, what is J? So things like that are things to look out for. Any questions on design and style? Okay. So we're going to go to Old Man. And Old Man is a perfect example of design. That's sort of, I would say, what they're testing in Old Man. Because, of course, your goal in Old Man is just to print out this song that says, you know, this old man, he played one, blah, blah, blah. And you can do this very easily with what? Just one command. What would it be? Yeah, so you can print F, type out the entire song, and, I mean, to be honest, your correctness would be fine. Like, you would be correct. If you indented it properly and all that and named it nicely, you would also have good style. But that would be horrific design. Because you never want it, whenever you see that things are repeating, so in the This Old Man song, there's obviously entire blocks of text that are repeating. And if you're ever, when you're writing any program, if you're ever copying and pasting, that's probably a sign of bad design. Not always, because sometimes it is necessary to have very similar code, but with minor changes in it. But when it's something like text, when you're trying to print out this song and it repeats and it repeats, that's probably not a good time to have copying and pasting. So you're going to want, what do you want? Whenever you want copying and pasting, whenever you want things to happen multiple times, what's the construction in Scratch or in C that you would want? What was that? Did someone say it? What? For loop, yes. Or other times it might be a while loop. Other times it might be a do while loop. It can be all sorts of things. In general, for loops will be very, very useful. Now, let me see a show of hands if you want me to sort of go over a for loop again, because it will be very important. So raise your hand if you want to see a for loop again. Raise them high, because I can't really see. Okay, I'll do it really quickly, because we're going to need it anyway. So we're going to do a for loop. We'll always, it's the way I've explained it to people, which is, you know, a pretty good general rule, is whenever you want something to happen X number of times, a for loop is a great tool to use. So in Scratch, when you said, like, repeat 10, so, like, repeat 10 times this block of code, then you're going to want a for loop. So what it does is you always have for, and then you declare a variable. So it would be, like, int I. You can start it at 0, you can start at 1, you can start at 20, but that would sort of be bad design and bad style. It would be, why are you starting it at 20? So you want to start it at 0 or 1, and then you're going to go I is less than some value, and then I plus plus. Alternatively, you could flip this so that it's I equals 0, I greater than value, I minus minus, so then every time you're decreasing Y. So what this for loop will do, the first time you run through it, I will be 0. Second time you run through it, I will be 1. The third time, I will be 2. So on and so on until you get to the less than this value. And then it will stop and exit. So whenever, now usually when you have a for loop, you're going to use this I in some way. And we're going to see how. Now another, yes, question. Oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah, and then you have to bracket things that are inside it. Same thing with if statements and else statements. You're going to always have if, blah, 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 and then you want to say what it does if it's true. If you have more than one line of code there, you have to put brackets around it. Otherwise, it will only happen once. Otherwise, only the first line will happen. So now another thing with these kinds of conditions that you have, not in this case so much, but if you have an if and then you have parentheses around a condition, in OffStars I saw a lot of people put semicolon after that condition. You don't want to put a semicolon after those kinds of conditions. So if you have an if statement, a while statement, something like that, and then you have some sort of condition, don't put a semicolon after it, because it's a lot like an English sentence. If you say, if this is true, do this, you can't put a period before do this, right? You can't do, if this is true, end of sentence. A semicolon is sort of like the end of a sentence in C. So you don't want to put semicolons around these conditions, because then nothing will evaluate under them. Okay. Now, another thing we're going to need in Old Man is, how many verses do we have in the song? Who knows? There are 10 verses in the song, right? So how many times is our for loop going to want to go? Okay, so grab the eraser. How would I make it go 10 times? Okay, so the answer was to write a 10 here. Now, this is correct. This is right. But this is another example of bad design and bad style. This 10 right here is called a magic number in this case, because someone reading it is going to say, well, why 10? What's so great about 10? Why is 10 a magic number? And we all know, because there are 10 verses in the song. But you want your code to be so well designed that anyone looking at it is going to understand exactly what this 10 is right away. So you want to store this 10 in a variable. Now, David talked in lecture about scope of variables, and not every function is going to have access to all your variables. So things like magic numbers, you usually want to define them as global variables. So the way to define something as a global variable is to use the pound define method. So you're going to do pound define. This is right after you pound include for all your libraries. And always make sure to do this. This trips so many people up. When you're using commands that aren't built into C, you can always use Google to find out what libraries they're in. So every time you use something that's in one of these libraries, you have to do two things. You have to include them at the top of your code with pound include, the name of the library. It's usually like cs50.h or math.h. And then when you compile, you can use this thing called make that CS50 has made. And what it does is it kind of takes into account all these things you have to compile with. So you just do, for greedy, for example, you could have just typed at the prompt, make greedy. And that's the equivalent of doing gcc-o, greedy, greedy.c, dash l, cs50-lm. LM for the math library. But alternatively, you could do the GCC command, but make sure you look up the libraries and what you have to compile with. It's usually dash L something. To define a magic number, pound define the name of your magic number, and then what it equals to. So in this case, our magic number is going to be the number of verses. So verses, and then what is it going to be defined to be? 10. Now, this isn't a variable like other variables. You're not going to change this ever. This is just always fixed the way it is. That's why it's called a magic number. So verses is always going to be 10, and there's no reason it shouldn't be. We're never going to decrease the number of verses. So now, what do we need to change about our for loop? Say it again? Yeah, I less than verses was the answer. So good. Now we've gotten rid of one design issue. Now, our other design issue was that we don't want to just type out the whole yes question. Yeah, you can. I didn't right now, but yeah, global variables are usually defined in all caps, so I can do that for you guys. You usually see it if you look at David's lecture notes and stuff in all caps. That way it'll turn red in your C program, and that when things are all caps, they turn red, so you can kind of keep track of them as magic numbers. So yeah, if I is less than verses. Now, we don't want to type out all the code all over again, so what are we going to do? We're going to want it to be in this for loop. But what are the parts, we need to divide out in our minds right now what parts are consistent throughout the song and what parts are changing. So if you know the song, or you can pull it up on the PDF, what part is always consistent? Well, half of the first two lines, right, and all of the last two lines of each verse. So here we're just going to have one verse in here, right? So now, the parts that are changing, does anyone have any idea how we can store these parts that are changing? Where can we put these parts that are changing? In an array. Excellent. Do you guys know that from reading the problem set? Or just, okay. So if you, did anyone use inventories in Scratch? Raise your hand if you used an inventory in Scratch. Okay, so only one person, but inventories are Scratch's way of introducing you to arrays. So if you used an inventory, like to keep track of things that people bought, or levels that have been accessed, anything like that, that's always an array. So does anyone know how to declare an array? Anyone? Okay, so we'll go through that right now. To declare an array, you always have its type, its name, and then its size. Now, its size is optional. And in today's walkthrough, we're not going to declare the size of our arrays. But we are going to have an array, and then you're going to go equals, and you're going to bracket off things you want to put in it, separated by commas. So what do we want to store in our array? Do you have a question?
Yeah, sorry. If you put the size as being 10, does that mean 10 plus 0, so 11, or just 10?
Okay. So if you put the size equals 10, That means there are 10 elements inside the array. Okay, if you put equals 9, that means there are 9 elements in the array. But what he is referring to is when you index an array. So the question was, you know, is this 10 how many items you have, or is this 10 the index? So when you index things, we're always zero index. That's why we start at pset 0. That's why we start at lecture 0, stuff like that in CS50, because we're making this sort of joke. So when we want to refer to the first item in this array, if the array is named name, so we're going to go to name bracket 0. That's going to be the first item. That's how you get to the first item. Name bracket 1 gets to the second item, et cetera, et cetera. So name bracket size. What does name bracket size get you to? If name bracket 0 gets you the first element, what does name bracket size get you to? Where size is the number of elements in your array. So if we have 10 elements here, name bracket 10, what does that get you to?
Does it roll over again?
It doesn't roll over. It gets you to a horrible thing called a segmentation fault. We call them seg faults, and I guarantee you, you're going to be sitting maybe in the basement of the Science Center, maybe in one of your rooms, and you're going to say, oh no, I have a seg fault. I guarantee you that will happen this semester, and you have to remember that most of the time, seg faults are attributed to accessing memory that you do not have. So this sounds complicated now because we haven't dealt with memory yet, but you will learn in upcoming weeks what exactly this means. But for now, whenever you're using an array and you get a segment fault, you should know that it's probably because you're going one step beyond the items in your array. So name bracket 10, if we have 10 items in this array, we don't have that memory. The last thing we have is name size minus 0. Size minus 1. The first thing we have is name bracket 0. The last thing we have is name size minus 1. This is bad. Bad. Don't do it. And it's very confusing because when you declare it, you have size. When you use it, you don't. So let's create an array. So what are we going to store in this array? We're going to store the parts that vary in this song. So what's the first part that varies in this song? The numbers. Okay, so we're going to have, let's say we have an array, let's name it numbers, right? Numbers would be our name. What's our type? String. Excellent. So our type is string. Our variable name, or our array name, is numbers. This means, so whenever you put the type, that means you have, so if you declare an array and your type is string, that means you have an array of strings. So it's kind of like a list of strings. If you put int here, if it was int numbers, then we would have an array of integers. So we would have sort of like a list of numbers. So an array of integers would look like this. Int numbers, we're not going to put the size because we want it to be variable in this case. And then you would put bracket 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's say we wanted 4 numbers. So in our string 1, what are we going to put in these brackets? Right, the words, right? And you don't forget, you have to put them in quotation marks to make them strings. So 1, 2, 3, et cetera, et cetera. And you close it, and you put a semicolon. You divide them with a comma. Yeah, I'm sort of writing pseudocode, sort of writing code, because I don't want to give you the answers. Ryan?
Is there a space between numbers and the first bracket for the array?
Oh, no. Here? There's no space. There's no space. You put the brackets right up against it.
Is it okay that, numbers is used for both the string and the same?
Oh, well, we're not declaring both. Sorry, this was just to tell you how to do it if it were to be an int. If you were to declare both an array of ints and an array of strings, you wouldn't use the same variable name. Don't use the same variable name. This was just because I was going to show you how to do it with ints, and then you guys were going to tell me how to do it with strings. So let's erase that so people don't get confused.
So if it is ints, you don't have to use quotation marks?
Right. You don't use quotation marks when it's an int. So you use quotation marks for strings in the back. Okay, the question was, where in the code would you put this? Well, you have to define things before you reference them, right? So if you were to reference this in the bottom, then you would just have to put it anywhere before you used it. So, but you never want to define things within loops. Well, I mean, you can, but in this case, there's no reason to define anything within a loop. So you would define it before you start this for loop. Because in this for loop, presumably, you're going to reference it, and we'll see how. Any other questions about this? Yes.
So if you put a number within the square brackets.
Okay, if you put a number within these square brackets, like up here, that's going to be the size of your array. So if here I have the numbers 1 through 3, here I could put a 3, and it would be fine. So then I would just have an array of size 3. And I couldn't go beyond that. I couldn't go less than that. So now in the problem set, we don't just want to go 1 through 3. We want to go 1 through what? 10, 1 through 10. So minor adjustment to this. So here, this part, you're almost done, right? Look how much code I've given you. Okay, so a couple chuckles. Okay, so now within our for loop, what do we want to put? We're, here, our purpose is to write out with one iteration of the for loop, what's our purpose? What are we going to achieve with one iteration of this for loop? The first time, if we only did this for loop once, so if it wasn't a for loop, if it was just a one-time thing, what would it do? It would print out the first verse. So this for loop, each time it goes through, it's going to print out a verse. So inside the for loop, we want to put things that are constant for all verses, right? So here, I'm not going to write the code, but to print out things, what do we use? The answer was in the question, yeah, printf. So in here, you're going to have some printfs, printf statements. You want to put all the words that are used in every single verse. So like, this old man, he played. And then what do you do about the 1? Because the first time you go through this for loop, you want it to be a 1. The second time, you want it to be a 2. The third time, you want it to be a 3, so on and so forth.
Will you use the verses there? Will you name it I?
Exactly. So you have this I. The answer is that you have this I here that's doing that. So I is going from 0 all the way up to the number of verses. So up to it's going to iterate 10 times. So it's going to go from 0 to 9. But you don't want those numbers there. You want these words, right? So how do you connect these two parts of your code?
You create a variable.
What did you say?
And you just print name bracket I.
Exactly. You print name bracket I. Except in this case, it's not name. It's numbers. It's going to be, or you can name it whatever you want. Obviously, this is going to be your array. So if you go numbers bracket I, the first time, it's going to go to numbers bracket 0. And what do we say? An array bracket 0 is? Exactly, it's the first element. So the first time you go through this for loop, if this is your array, it's going to put the 1 there. Second time, it's going to be 2. The third time, it's going to be 3. Before I take your question, let me say one more thing. You're not just going to put printf, quotation marks, blah, 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 numbers bracket I, because then that's literally going to write out numbers bracket I in when it comes out as your program. So you're going to do the same thing you did for greedy when you want to tell them how many coins and that was a variable. So what did you do? How did you print variable amounts? Right. So you use the percent sign, and then in greedy you use percent D to print out the number of coins. What are you going to use in this case? Because it's not a number, right? Percent S, exactly. Percent S for string. Okay, so I'm not going to write any of this because I want you guys to think about how you're going to actually do it in code, but if you think about the way we've just talked about it, it should be pretty clear how to get these numbers in, right? So that's the first part for how many the man played. Is that how you would say it? And then the next thing that's variable in the song is what? This old man, he played one, he played knick-knack. On what, right? So what did he play on? That's going to be variable. So you're going to do basically the same exact thing and the same exact thing in this for loop. Yeah.
Is it still okay to do like multiple printfs, or is it better to do like all in one printf with multiple like percent s's or something?
It's okay. The question was, do you have to do it all in one? Can you do it all in one printf, or should you do it all in multiple printfs? It's fine to have multiple printfs here. In my problem set that I handed in last year, I had multiple printfs. That's fine. And you want, just to make it pretty, you want backslash ends, for example, stuff like that, to make sure that it's going as a song. Another note about style is that you don't want ever your code to be longer than 80 lines. So the terminal window, if you use Mac, or the PuTTY window, when it comes up, it'll be 80 characters wide. We know this because of Mario, right? We know this very well. If you expand your window, which is fine, like if you want to expand it so you could see more code at once, that's totally fine. If you feel more comfortable that way, but you want to make sure that when you're typing, you're never going past 80 spaces across, because that's bad style. because someone who opens their window is going to have it, it opens their window and it's the default size of 80 wide. It's going to have this code wrapping around. It's going to be very ugly and not readable. So that's called like pretty printing. That and putting comments and naming variables nicely, things like that. Yes.
So if you're typing in all the things he played and it goes on longer than 80 lines, you just press enter?
Yeah, so the question was how to go to the next line. If you're going over 80, you just press enter. And try not to press enter at random time, at random places. You know, press enter where it makes sense. Go on to the next line. Same thing with multi-line comments. If you have a comment and it's, you know, going over one line, you can either use the backslash star to start the comment and then forward slash. So you do forward slash star, star, forward slash, and then you could write multi-line comments in between. Alternatively, you can just, I don't think it matters if you just do two forward slashes to do the two lines of comment, but don't have your comments wrap around. Yeah?
How do you print, like if you're using a printf command, how do you print multiple lines? Because when I was doing it, it would stop the string if I typed something too long, you know, longer than 80 characters.
Okay, so this is the question is how do you printf something that's longer than 80 characters? In this case, I would just say to use multiple printfs. That's like somewhere where it's okay. That's why I used multiple printfs last year, because that just solves the problem if you have each printf just printing one line. In this case, each verse is only going to have four lines. So to have four printfs isn't excessive at all.
So back driving?
Yeah.
When you say pound define a global variable, do you do that right at the beginning after you include the different libraries?
Yes, so the question was about defining these global variables. You do it right after you include your libraries. Any other questions? And of course, before you use this global variable. And but it's outside your main function, too. So when you write main argc, yeah. Anything else? Oh, yes. Which one? Oh, okay. So these strings that are constant throughout the... Okay, so the question was, stylistically, should you put strings and stuff outside the for loop or inside? I don't think it's a huge style thing. Maybe it's slightly preferable to put things like that outside the for loop and then just have variables inside the for loop, but it's nothing major at all. You can just put in things inside the for loop. If it's things that are repeating, though, like the arrays, we don't want them in for loops. We want... things that are variable, like the arrays... things like this, we want to take out so that we can change them. And we want to define this before the array, before the for loop. We want to define the array before the for loop begins. Any other questions before we move on to Caesar?
The verses, do you say versus equal 10, or can you just...
No. For when you define things like this, you don't say versus equals 10. It's just pound define versus 10. There's spaces here. Yeah.
Just about global variables. In this case, why would versus be a global variable?
Okay, so the reason versus is a global variable instead of defined in main, it's not, your code will still work if your versus is just a variable defined inside main. It's just better style to do it outside. It's better design as well, because something like a 10 here would be sort of a, it would be a magic number. So you don't want to have the 10 there. And then the reason you define it outside as a global variable is because you want every function you write to have access to it. So in this case, it might not be that crucial because you might just have one function. You might just have the main function and everything inside of it, which is totally fine. But it's just a good practice to get into to define these things as global variables, because in the future, or in this problem set if you like, you can define things, and I'll let you worry about how to do this on your own, you can define things outside of main. You can define functions outside of main. And if you want to do this, a good way of figuring out how is to look at David's lecture slides from this past week. I think on Wednesday he had a bunch of functions that were outside the main, like the swap function, if you remember. But then, if you remember, there was also problems with the swap function that he had. He was sending numbers or variables to the swap function, and they were supposed to switch, and they didn't switch. So the reason they didn't switch is because not both functions, the one in the main and the one below main, did not have access to this variable. So it didn't know what this variable was. It just created a copy of it. So if you have a global variable, then everyone knows, because it's defined outside of main. It's before main, so everyone knows what this global variable is, and everyone has access to it. Any other questions? Okay, great. So we're going to move on to Caesar. .c, let me erase all this. Okay. Now, one thing Caesar is going to teach us is how to use command line arguments. Because your Caesar function, if you remember your greedy function, for example, your greedy function, the user just had to type in greedy, then you had a printf that asked them how much change is needed, and then they put in the number of change. So in Caesar, we're doing it a little bit differently. We're going to have the user, when they run Caesar, they're going to have to put Caesar and some key value. So it's going to be like Caesar 15. This means take the word I'm about to give you, the phrase I'm about to give you, the sentence I'm about to give you, and shift everything by 15. So if you want the user to be able to put in these command line arguments, you're going to have to know how to retrieve them from the user or from the what they're typing in, from their input. So it's not get int as it is after the program is already running. It's a command line argument. So the where you've seen sort of the references to this is in that int arg c char star arg v part where you define main, and that was sort of complicated and we sort of brushed it off. This is where it comes in handy. This is where you're going to use it. So in that statement, that's your the parameters of main. Does anyone know what arg c and arg v are? Does anyone know what argc and argv are? Yes.
Argc is the number of command line arguments.
Right. So argc is the argument count, which counts the number of arguments given at the command line. But one thing you should know is if the user just types the name of your program, so if they just type Caesar, what's the argc? What's the arg count if your user just typed Caesar? One. Yeah, I heard someone say it. So if they just type the name of your program, argc is one. So even though this isn't them typing something extra, it still counts as an argument. And then you were going to say what argv was?
Oh, it's just an array of each of the command line arguments.
Right. It's gonna have an array of each of these command line arguments. So it's going to be the argument values. This is going to be one argument count, not multiple. Okay, so here you have the number of arguments the person gave in, and this is what those arguments actually were. So if this is an array, and we just discussed arrays, how would we get the first argument given to this array, given in this array? How would you get the first argument? This is an array like any other.
Argv0,
exactly. So let's say the person at their prompt wrote Caesar 12. What's argv0? Caesar. I won't confuse you with the arrow notation. Okay. So Caesar 12, and then how do you get the 12?
Argv1.
Okay, so this the word Caesar probably isn't going to mean much to you because, you know, it's just the name of your program. You don't really need to refer to it as much. But argv1 is going to come in very useful because we're going to need to use this 12 that they've passed in, correct? Okay, so once we've gotten this input from the user, what do we want to do? Once we've gotten what they want to shift by, who knows the Caesar formula? Look in your spec, someone. Look in your process. Are there parentheses around it or no in the spec? Okay, good. So just make sure that you're modding by 26. Now, why is it? Who remembers what mod means? You all used it, right? Show of hands, what's mod? Oh, okay, someone say it because not everyone is raising their hand.
The remainder dividing p plus k by 26.
Exactly. So this is going to give you the remainder when p plus k is divided by 26. Now, let's go through what each of these things is. What's C1? Right, it's like the new output, right? So the changed sort of character. Or we could say like Caesared character. And what's P? P is the normal, you know, it's the first. So C1 is going to be the first character, the first letter of your changed phrase. P1 is going to be the first letter of your original phrase. So I guess original. And this is all going by letter, right? So it's not the whole change equals the whole original plus k. No, it's letter by letter. So we're going to see how we're going to iterate over that. Okay, so changed equals original plus k. What's k?
Number the user provides.
It's the number the user provides was the answer. K is sort of your key. It's called a key because it's if both sides know what the key is, so the person that's going to encode the message tells the key to the person that's going to have to decode it later. So if you're in an army battle, for example, you know, one commander is going to know what key he's using. He's going to write a message using that key. He's going to send it to the other guy. The other guy can't do anything with that unless he knows the key. I mean, he can figure it out probably, but in theory, he would need to know the key. So this is like a secret key. Okay, so plus the, let's call it the key. That's fine. Everyone knows what that is. And then why do we mod 26? Because that's the number of letters in the alphabet, exactly. So one thing you're going to want to look at for this problem set is the ASCII table. You could Google this. It's ASCII is written like that. So you want to Google the ASCII table and take a look at it. And if you have your laptop now, take a look at it. You don't have to by any means, but you know it's good to be looking at this ASCII table when you're thinking about how to shift these numbers. The ASCII table is going to pair each. I would show it to you right now, but the projector doesn't work on weekends. Go figure. It'll shift each letter to a number amount. So for example, Chris is laughing because she knows that the projector doesn't work. Okay. So you're going to, if you have the lowercase letter A, does anyone know, or if anyone's looking at the ASCII table right now, what's lowercase A in ASCII? 97. Yeah, it's 97. So if you put A in single quotes like this, that's the same thing as writing 97. And you'd actually rather put the A in single quotes because this is, again, the concept of magic numbers. So you always want your reader to know, why is he using 97? And maybe your reader hasn't looked at ASCII for a while or doesn't remember that A is 97. So with A, it's clear to most people that have been using this kind of stuff that A is 97, but never use something like 99 for C. You know, you don't want to do that. So you would put, you know, single quote C, single quote. So this is going to be 97, and what's big A? 65. Okay, so this is going to be very valuable to us. So now, the reason we're modding by 26 is if you look at the ASCII table and you look at Z, I don't know what number Z is. I could probably figure it out in a second, but whatever, not irrelevant. If you look at what Z is, if you were to add, you know, 2 to Z, that would go into some sort of punctuation. I don't know what's 2 after Z in ASCII, but it's not what you want it to be. What you want your Caesar cipher to do is to wrap around. So whenever we want to wrap this idea of wrapping around, we're going to use mod. So in this case, we want, if we add 2 to Z, what do we want to get? B, exactly. So we want to get B, so we can't just add 2 because then we'll get some sort of punctuation. That's not what we want. So if you're running your code after you've finished writing it and you're getting some sort of errors, or it's running properly, but the thing ciphered is wrong because it has some sort of punctuation in it, then it's probably a problem with modding by 26. So you always want to do that. So this is your formula, sort of. Now you want to go letter by letter, right? So what kind of construction can we use to go letter by letter? Say it louder. A loop. What kind of loop? The for loop. Look at that. We're using a for loop again. I'm telling you, everything comes down to for loops. Okay, so let me go here so that I don't erase all of this. We're going to use a for loop that's going to iterate over what? What's it going to iterate over? And that's going to go over this for loop. How many times do you want to do this to each letter of the word? Exactly, for how many letters there are in the word. So you're going to go from I equals, let's say, 0, to I less than, well, what? How do we get the number of letters in a word? Say it again. Okay, well, argc is going to tell you how many arguments there are. Yes? String length, exactly. So C, when they make commands, they take out all the vowels, sort of. So string length looks like strlen. And actually, if you talk to people doing these problem sets with you, you're going to be like, hey, what's the strlen of? That's kind of funny. They don't take out the E. Anyway, so this strlen is going to give you the length of a word. So if you put, like, a word here, it's going to give you the string length, the string length, so the number of letters in this word. But I'm not going to put that in the for loop because that's going to confuse you. But essentially, you're going to get, in this case, we're getting, the only thing we're getting at the command line, the only thing that argc and argv are responsible for is this part. So it's the Caesar command and it's the key. So this is K, right? So if you want to store K and it's in the command line, how can you access it? That's what you, one of you just said. What? Yeah, argv what? Yeah, argv1 is going to be this 12, or this k. So if it's Caesar k, to make it more generic, if this is Caesar k, then argv1 equals k. And now there's going to be two sort of error checking things that you're going to have to do to make sure that your user is using your program correctly. So one thing you're going to have to make sure is that they have Caesar and a value here. So if it's entered your program Caesar, they've typed Caesar. So you don't have to check that they typed Caesar, but you do need to check that they typed something after. So how can you make sure that they typed something after Caesar?
Argcount.
Argcount, exactly. What does argcount have to be if they typed Caesar and K? Two, exactly. So you want to have an if statement that sort of, if our count equals two. Another thing that tripped a lot of people up is, you should know by now, the equal sign is just an assignment. So if you put A equals B, that just means take whatever's in B and put it in A. But if you want to check if A is equal to B, so if you want this, then what you need is A what? Equals equals B, right. So if you ever had a condition that was just if A equals B, that's just going to assign B to A, and it's always going to be true if it did this successfully, which it will. So you always want this sort of thing when you're using conditions. Okay, so that was sort of a aside. So once you've, okay, so you need to check that this argument count equals 2, meaning that they've provided Caesar and a key, and if it's not, you want to give them an error message. So you're just going to print out an error message to them, like, you need to provide a key, or you need to use my function this way. And then you're going to do this thing called return 0. Return 1. Does anyone know what returns? I'm thinking return 0. I'm writing return 0. OK. Does anyone know what return 0 is? It's that you're done, right. So it's that you're done with no errors. If your program is, that's why when you define main, you do int main, because main is supposed to return an int. So the int that it returns is usually either 0 or 1. 0 means everything went smoothly, the program is done, and everything's fine. You always try, or you should, it's good style, it's good practice, to return 0 at the end of your code. So at the end of your function, your last thing that you type before you close your brackets for main is return 0. That means if I've gotten to this point, that means I've passed everything and everything's fine, I'm going to return 0. If you have errors along the way, usually you'll probably only have one option for error, so you can return 1. But if you have three different errors, and you want to know when your user runs the program, what they fumbled upon, what was their error, you're going to want to return 1 for one error, return 2 for another. So in this case, let's say they didn't type in a key. So you want to send out a message, like a complaint, you want to print it out, you need to give me a key. And then you return 1. So if you're running this program and it brings back a 1, now it's never going to print this 1. You're just going to know underneath, sort of, that it returned the 1. And then later you can say, well, this k right here, what does it have to be for Caesar to work? It has to be an integer, right? It has to be a number. So this k, if it's not a number, you might want to return 2. And then you know that if it returned 2, you know how your user messed up. So those are kind of the reasons you have these return values. So let's tackle that problem. How do you check that the user typed in a number here for k? Because I'll tell you right now, at the command line reads everything as a string. So it's going to read this k as a string, not as an int. So how do you make sure that it's numbers? Does anyone know the function? You probably don't. No one? OK, so there's this function called isDigit. I don't know where to write anymore. Okay, so isDigit. Now this is this a built-in C function? Have you seen it before? No, it's not a built-in C function. So I leave it up to you. If you're gonna use this, which you probably will need, you're gonna need to find what library it's in, include that library. You're gonna want to find out how to compile with that library and go ahead and compile with that library. So if you use isDigit, now Google this and you'll find all this information. You'll find out exactly how to use it, the exact syntax. You'll find out how to compile with it and how to include it. Okay, so this isDigit is going to take in a character of a string, and it's going to tell you whether it's a digit or not. So digits are from 0 to 9. And if it's anything from 0 to 9, it's going to say true. If it's not, then it's going to say false. So now you don't want to just check k k, you just don't want to check k, right? Because k could be like 2h, right? And if you just say, is the first thing a digit, it's going to say yes. But Caesar doesn't know what to do with 2h, right? So you have to check each letter in k. And I say letter because this is a string, so you can say, I guess, character might make it less confusing. You want to check each character that the user has typed in after Caesar. So what do we call this k? How do we refer to it? Yes, you refer to it as argv1. So you want to check each character in argv1 to make sure it's a digit. Now, what's going to happen is these strings. Now, here's where I might lose some of you, so try to follow and I'll repeat it. These strings are arrays of chars. So a string is an array of characters. So the string foo is an array that holds an F, an O, and an O. So we said, how do we, you know, index these arrays? So you would say, you know, if this was named name, let's say. So in this case, we said we do name bracket 0, name bracket 1, et cetera, et cetera. But in this case, you're already working with an array, right? You're working with argv1. So now if you want the first letter of the first argument, of the command line, that's going to be argv1 bracket 0. So you're going to have sort of two things. And in this case, if k, let's say k was two things, it's going to get the first k, right? Or let's say it's km. Then this 1 bracket 1 would get you the m. Okay? So now this is confusing. This is a two-dimensional array. It's confusing. You don't necessarily want to deal with this. If you don't want to deal with this, store argv1 in a variable. So store things in variables, store argv1 into something. Store it into, I don't know, the key. So if you have a variable called key, store argv1 into it, and then you can just do key bracket 0. That way you're not working with two arrays. I found that to be a lot easier. So once you have, you're referring to each part of your key, you want to make sure they're all digits. So if they're all digits, you're fine. If they're not, you're returning this error, right? So now, if I said that this is a string, how is Caesar going to shift something by the amount of a string? It can't. So here's another function you're going to need. It's written in the spec. It's called, so you need isDigit. You're also going to need a2i. Now, a2i shifts a string to an integer. String to integer. So you're going to have this km thing that's a string, but you want it to be an integer. So you're going to use a2i. And do that. Now make sure that you first check that it's a digit before you use a to I. Because if it's not a digit, a to I is going to return an error. Because it can't convert non-digit strings into integers. It can only return strings that are actually integers. I know that's confusing. It's because the command line will only take in strings. It'll consider everything a string. But if you have digits, use a to I to convert that argument to an integer. Okay? Not too lost? Questions? About that part? Okay, so now if all has gone well up until now, we now have our k. Let's return this back to k because we're not worrying about the characters. If all has gone well, we have k and it's the amount we want to shift by and everything is great. So now I come back to this question of a strlen. So we want to convert each letter in our phrase or in our sentence by this k value to a new string. So you wanted this for loop to go up until strlen of your user input. Now, in this case, we're asking for the user input the same way we've been doing it so far, right? So how have we been getting user input? Get int, exactly. Or in this case, since they're putting in a sentence, what's that? Get string, exactly. So you're going to be getting a string from the user, and you're going to want to check. So let's say we store that string in some variable named word. Or it'll really be a sentence, but word is shorter than sentence, so I wrote that. So you want to check the length of this word. Now, yeah, you can do it here, but here we run into the issue of plus. Here we run into the issue of design. If you're doing this, if you're checking that I is less than strlen word all the time in this part of your for loop, then you're checking, then you're measuring the strlen of the word each time you iterate through the for loop. And you don't want to do that because that's wasting CPU cycles. CPU cycles every time you go through a for loop, for example. So you don't want to be checking the strlen of the word every time. So you want to store that also in some variable. So strlen word is going to be another thing. You're going to first get the word from the user using getString. then you're going to want to find the length of that. You're going to store that in some variable. Now, I'm not writing all this out, but keep it in mind. And then here, you're going to check that you're less than that length. So let's call that letters, because it's iterating over the number of letters in your sentence. So now, you're going over this for loop this many times. Do you have a question? How do you deal with spaces? Okay, exactly. That's a great question. That's what I was about to get to. So you're in this for loop. You're going letter by letter. You hit a space. You don't want to change spaces. You want the spaces to stay because you want it to still have the breakdown of the sentence. So you're going to have to check, before you change anything, you're going to have to check whether it's a letter, but you don't just care if it's any old letter. You also want to preserve capitalization. So if the first letter in the sentence is capitalized, when you shift it, it should still be capitalized. Right? So you're going to have these conditions that check what? Well, you don't really need to check for the space if you're checking for the letters, because you're going to have something like, if my letter that I'm currently on is between, so now how do you refer to the letter that you're currently on? Anyone? Okay, so that's going to be a main thing that you have to think about. How do I refer to my current letter in this sentence or in this word? Remember that you do have word up here, and that a word is a sequence, it's an array of, exactly, he just said, it's an array of chars. So I want to refer to the first char in the word, okay, and you're going to test that first char. So let's say, I'll give it away, because it's just much easier for the both of us. So let's say we have word, which is actually the sentence, sorry, misleading. If we have word sub I, and I is going to first be 0, so it's going to first give you the first letter. So let's say we store that in current. Let's say cur as current. So it's the current letter that we're working on. You need to check if this current letter, is between little a and little z. So remember, we're going to use these things. Use the letters in single quotes. Don't use the numbers. You can use numbers. It'll still work, but it's just better style to use the letters. So use the letters to check if this current letter is between little a and little z. And if it is, then what do? If it's between little a and little z, this is where you're going to perform your Caesar operation. This is where this function is going to come in handy. So this is where one thing that might trip you up is you don't want it to, if, for example, you're on z, you don't want to add to z and then mod, because it's going to actually come up incorrect if you mod after adding to z. You have to first subtract off the letter you're on currently. Okay, so you want to subtract off to end up at 0, then you want to add the shift, then you want to add back. Okay, so you want to subtract to get to 0. Now, how do you get, you want A to be 0, right? So you want to subtract off A. You don't subtract off, like, if you don't need to know what this letter is, this first letter, but you need to know that you want A to be 0. So if A is 97 and you want A to be 0, you're really subtracting 97, but we said we're not going to use numbers, we're going to use the letters, so you want to kind of subtract off A. That will offset everything. That'll make B equal to 1, C equal to 2, right, and then you add your K, so you shift it, right, so you add your K, you shift it, then you wrap around so that you're back to, you know, somewhere the 2s, the 3s if you were on Z before, and then you add back your A to make sure it moved over. So now the process is exactly the same for uppercase letters, except you obviously check if it's between big A and big Z, you subtract big A, do the shift, add back big A. So now if you've checked if it's between lowercase Z and uppercase Z, then you've basically checked if it's a letter. And if it's not, it's not going to shift it. So if it's in this for loop, it's checking, is it a lowercase letter? If so, shift it this way. If it's then you have another if statement. If it's an uppercase letter, then shift it this way. And then you're done. So if it hasn't shifted it, that means if it's a space, then it hasn't shifted it, because both conditions failed. So at the end, all you want to do is print out your new sentence. So now, are there any quick questions? Because we are going to have to take a tape break. So if there's a quick question, I can answer it now. Okay, great. So let's take our tape break. It'll be about 5 minutes while she changes the tape, and then we'll do the last part, which is visionnaire. So 5-minute break. Okay, so now we're gonna do the Visionnaire part. Visionnaire is very similar to Caesar. What a lot of people do when they start the Visionnaire part is literally copy and paste all of their code from Caesar into Visionnaire, because it's really into your new Visionnaire file, because it's really very similar, so it's a good skeleton, it's good building blocks. A lot of things will be the same, and you'll just have to sort of add new considerations. So how does Visionnaire work? So we can figure out what these new considerations are. Yes?
Isn't it, it takes in another string and then uses that string to figure out how many buttons to shift by?
Exactly. So the answer is that Visionnaire takes a string and it shifts one string that the user is going to put in by another string. So in this case, you still have Visionnaire K, but this time K is a string. This time K is a string and not a number. So the command line reads everything as strings, but in this case you want it to be a string. You don't need to convert it to an integer because you want the string. So let's say like Visionnaire foo, what it would do is someone give me a sentence or a short phrase, like a two-letter phrase, two-word phrase.
I love CS.
I love CS. That's great. I didn't even come up with it. Okay. I love CS. Okay, so what Visionnaire would do is add foo to this. So it's going to be plus F. Is it going to add an O to the space? No, it shouldn't. So then we're going to have O here, O here. Uh-oh, we're out of key. What do we do? Start again. So F, O, no space, O, start again, F. Going to add all this, it's going to come up with new letters, right? Because it's going to treat this as a number, it's going to add, you know, the ASCII value of I to the ASCII value of F, get an ASCII value, convert that to a letter. So this is going to be a new phrase. That's going to be better hidden, right, than Caesar, because Caesar was just add 12, add 12, add 12, add 12, or add K. In this case, you're sort of changing everything, and what if you're, again, that military commander, you're going to want to tell your person the keyword is foo, and they're going to have to add foo. So the new consideration here is that this foo, this K, is going to not have to be a digit, but is going to have to be what? Right, a string, so it's going to have to be an alphabetical character. So the same way that there was a function is digit, there's a function, can you guess what it is? It's alpha. So you're going to use this function is alpha the same way used is digit to check that each letter of K is in fact a letter. So again, if the person gives you numbers here, that's no good. Visionnaire can't deal with numbers, so you're going to send them some sort of error. So you want to check is alpha. If it is, then you're pretty much set, and you're pretty much going to work the same as you did with Caesar, except that in this case you have to worry about a new thing, well, two new things. One is that you have to do what with foo? Because like if there's less letters in your key, if foo has less letters than your sentence, what do you want to do? Wrap around, right. So you have to worry about this wrapping around idea, which you didn't have to worry about in Caesar. And what did I say earlier in this walkthrough about how you, every time you need to wrap around, what kind of function should come into your mind? Modulo, exactly. So you're going to somehow use modulo to wrap around this foo. So what are you going to modulo over? It's going to be like, what do you want to wrap around? Before we want to wrap around the alphabet, right, someone said three, so because foo has three letters, but you really want to modulo over however many letters this has. And how do you find out how many letters are in a string? Strlen. See how everything comes together? Right, so you're going to use strlen to find this. You're at some point going to have to modulo over this to make sure you don't run out of letters in your key. And another thing you have to worry about is since you're going, you're sort of incrementing this letter as well, right? So you want to, the first time you go through your for loop, you want to add F. The next time, well, in this case, you don't want to add anything. But then the next time you want to add O, the next time you want to add O. So your key is sort of progressing just as your word is, except that your word is progressing on every iteration of the for loop, but your key is not supposed to change. It's not supposed to go on to the next letter in your key if you have a space. So that's a consideration you have to take into account. Whenever you have a space, you don't move on to your next letter in your key. So one thing that trips people up is they say, well, it's incrementing kind of the same, right? So every time, so if I have a variable I in my for loop, so if my for loop is going I equals 0, I equals 1, I equals 2, then I might as well use the I index of my key, so key bracket I. But that's not going to work necessarily, because if you ever have a space, it's going to put an O here. You don't want that. So you want to only increment. So remember how before we were checking, is it a lowercase letter? If so, do this. If it's an, is it an uppercase? If so, do this. But your for loop is, regardless of whether it was a lowercase or uppercase letter, going to increment I by 1. But you don't want, let's say this is J, for example. You don't want J to increment unless you've used this sort of key to shift. So if it's not a lowercase letter or it's not an uppercase letter, then you have it, you don't want to shift it. So you don't want to go on to your next letter. You don't want to go on to the next index in your key. So it's not going to be key index I the same as this is like sentence or word index I. So you're going to want to have a different thing, like I said, like J, that sort of iterates over this and makes sure that it only increments if it's used this letter in the key for something. If it hasn't used it, don't increment it. Any questions? Yes? The question was, can you use a for loop to do that? Yes. I'm telling you, it's remarkably similar to Caesar. So it's the same skeleton as Caesar, it's the same sort of constructions, but there are these problems like this incrementing this or like going over this. There's the problem of modding over this. And you're checking again, is it alpha instead of is it a digit? So things like this are going to be minor changes, sort of, but the basic idea of shifting by a number is still the same. It's just in this case, you're shifting by a different number that's represented as a letter for each letter in your sentence. Yeah?
This is probably a stupid question, but how do you copy and paste in Nano?
How do you copy and paste in Nano? I think. You can copy, you can't copy. What's the control for cutting? Is it control? You can just do it the normal way you would do it in Microsoft Word or something by highlighting and right-clicking. You can't click if you're trying to move around things, but you can click to highlight. You can't click, like if you're on the top of Nano and you want to get to the bottom, you can't, you know, click your way down. You have to scroll your way down, which is really frustrating and annoying. But you can click and sort of highlight everything, right-click it and copy. Right-click, and copy.
It goes away.
It's, you can, then you can use your, what is it? I know on Mac it's Command-C, right? So is it the same on PC? Yeah.
You can also just save the file with a different name, and you get two files, one with
the
old name.
The suggestion someone brought up is that you can just resave the file with a different name, and then you'll have two copies of it. But I've never had a problem with just normal copy and paste like I would in Microsoft Word. So the only thing is you can't like scroll while you're doing it, so you have to copy and paste parts of your thing at a time. If you expand your window, you can do more. Another thing, I don't know if you guys are frustrated in Terminal that if you hit delete, which is backspace in Microsoft Word, it actually deletes the character you're on right now. Has anyone had a problem with that? It like deletes what you're typing, and then you accidentally delete something you didn't want to delete because you're used to backspacing. There's a thing if you go into, I think it's in System Preferences in Terminal, so you go to the Terminal menu, System Preferences. I think it's under Advanced Preferences. There's something that says Delete Sends Control H. Control H is backspace. So if you say delete sends control H, that means it's going to go delete backwards. So it's going to be a backspace and delete the things before your cursor, not what your cursor's on. So if it doesn't bother you, ignore what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. If you're fine, you're fine. But I found myself deleting a lot of the code that I wanted inadvertently. So I changed my preferences to do that. Any other questions? Okay, great. So I will stay behind and answer any questions that remain. If not, good luck on the problem set. There are office hours, 7 to 11 every night. And 1 to 5, I believe, on Friday.